Yesterday we went through some of the Rashis and some selective Midrashim about Perek Gimel. We cannot finish the entire thing. Just a few more little points I want to make. Let's go to Perek Gimel. Let's continue where we left off in Rashi. We cannot did all of the Rashis. There were just a few little things that we did not complete. Again, it's Perek Gimel. We are up to in the Rashi's Pasik Chaf. Okay, Pasik Chaf. Now, just one point I want to make is that Rashi mentions in Pasik Yud Aleph, he mentions in passing the number 38. There are 38 names listed. If you count the names, and I didn't get a chance to go figure this out, but Rashi says that over here somewhere you will find 38 names Rashi, the previous Rashi told us to count. Okay, there are 38 banim. 38, I'm not sure what Rashi means, either generations or he means names. There's some calculation here in this perek of the number 38. And this corresponds to the tefillah of David. David HaMelech Vayivarech David as Hashem Leinei Kol HaKohol Vayomer David Baruch Hashem Lekei Shol Min Oilam Vayar Oilam. This is what we say in davening every single day. Towards the end of Pesukei DeZimra, there are exactly 38 words there, and those 38 words are a reward for David HaMelech praising Hashem with 38 words. We have here 38 names of his children are mentioned here in this perek that Ezra was miyachis. What is curious is that he says that Lamed Ches Tishpoches B'Sefer Ezra. Now this is Rashi. Now we know this is not the real Rashi. This is not Rabbi Shlomo Yitzchaki. That we know. We discussed it many times that the commentary here that's titled Rashi is not the real Rashi. But it must have been someone very great. A Rishayim, someone who lived approximately at the time of Rashi, maybe a little bit afterwards. It has to be. This is not just written by a simple person. And he writes here that it's written in Sefer Ezra. Now, this is not Sefer Ezra. This is called Sefer Divrei Hayamim. We know there's much discussion that there is really no such thing as Sefer Nehemiah. Sefer Nehemiah is really all part of Sefer Ezra. And in fact, when Rashi in the Gemara refers to a pasuk quoted in Sefer, what we call Sefer Nehemiah, Rashi says it's in Sefer Ezra. And seemingly, there were no parakim. I don't think there were any parakim in the time of Rashi. It was not broken up into parakim. It was just a continuous flow from Sefer Ezra to what we call Sefer Nehemiah. So that's very well known. And the 24 books of Tanakh, we know they have a tradition. There must be 24 books corresponding to the 24 Tachshit of Akala in Sefer Yeshaya. In the beginning of Sefer Yeshaya, we spent much time talking about this. And if you're going to add Sefer Nehemiah, you're going to have 25. Chanukah, remember that? Chanukah? They stopped from making Sefer Hamakabim or Sefer Yehudis into another Sefer 25. So they're only 24. So if you add Nehemiah, you're going to have 25. Nehemiah is not a real Sefer. Nehemiah is all included in what we call Sefer Ezra. But here, this Rashi says something which is very disturbing, that if you count the prayer, the Sefer Ezra, you will find in Baruch Hashem Elokei Shom Ad Ulechazek Lamed Ches Tevos. There is no such Nusach in Sefer Ezra. What? Rashi in Pasuk Yud Aleph, the very end of Rashi Pasuk Yud Aleph, the last quote, where he mentions the 38 names listed here in this parak. Those 38 names were listed in a reward for David praising Hashem with this prayer that we say in davening with 38 words. And Rashi here says that where will you find this prayer? In Sefer Ezra. Now the editor put it out, you have different prints of the Sefer, but the editor put it in the parentheses, where is this prayer found? In Divrei Hayamim, Aleph Perek Chof Tes. Problem is, that is not called Sefer Ezra. That is called Sefer Divrei Hayamim. So what here is he doing? So here in the parentheses, do you have this in your parentheses, in your edition? So here in the parentheses says that the Koroi Sefer Ezra, Lefisha Ezra Kosav Divrei Hayamim. Yud Vav Shin, I don't know what that stands for. Yudvav Shinhei, I don't know what that means, but that's a very interesting idea that this is something we never came across before. That Divrei Hayamim is also called by the Kadmonim Sefer Ezra. It's a chiddush. In Yeshiva, we always learned that Nehemiah is called Sefer Ezra, but not Divrei Hayamim. It's called Sefer Ezra, and here it says that it is called Sefer Ezra. What is who wrote Divrei Hayamim? Ezra. If Ezra wrote this book, it's also called Sefer Ezra. It's a very interesting point to remember, to take note of. Okay, now we go to Pasuk Chaf. Pasuk Chaf continues to mention the genealogy of the family of David. Chasid Yosef Chesed Chamesh. Chamesh Hayu Levad Mishulamis Achleisam. So in the pasuk records that there were five. We look at the pasuk Chaf. It says Vachashuva. If you have that handout, okay. If you have that handout, I don't even have one of those handouts. Let me see if I can find one. Yeah, the one from yesterday, the later one, not the earlier one. But it's not. I don't really need it for now. But if you look down in the Yichus. Let's see if I could find another one. I got it. If anyone needs more, there's more here. Okay.
Anybody else
need? Yeah, I need one. Let me find one. Yeah. Okay, got more. Okay. So I got, okay. There's another one over here. Okay, so here we have Pasuk Chaf. Now this, Pasuk Chaf corresponds to the, on the very bottom of the page, the extreme right. You see we have Zerubbabel, and he had five sons. He had Chashuva, Ohel, Berachia, Chasida, and Yoshev Chesed. Now I told you that the word Yoshev Chesed, Yushav Chesed, is one name. Because if it was two names, it would not be Chamesh, it would be six. So that's according to, I don't know, one of the Rishonim on the page. But over here Rashi says, V'chasid Yoshev Chesed Chamesh, Chamesh Hayu Levad. What? Levad Mishulamis Achaisam. Because if you look at Zerubbabel had this is besides Shulamis, the sister. Now these are all children. Zerubbabel, these are not sons. Even though I wrote it going downwards on this handout, that's because I just don't have space to write it across. But all of these are children. That's five children right there. Shulamis is a sister, that's a sixth child. Then we have Hanani, the seventh child. Then we have Meshulam, an eighth child. So we have over here really eight children of Zerubbabel. Zerubbabel is, I mean, he's one of the most important figures of the Tekuf of the Bayesheni. He was the leader, he was a descendant of David, obviously. He would have been the Melech, had things gotten better. Maybe he really was. He did have a status of a melech, and he came together with Yochanan Kohen Gadol to rebuild the Bayis Sheni. He had eight children. The reason why we're dividing, we mentioned this when we learned the Pesukim inside. The reason why we're dividing up the eight children of Zerubbabel, the different categories, even to the point where we call five of his sons completely separate than the other ones, because they were born after they already arrived in Eretz Yisrael. Zerubbabel had two sets of children. He had the children that were born in Bavel, and he had children that were born when they arrived in Eretz Yisrael. So it seems that Hananiah and Meshulam were born to him when they were in Bavel. And then when Koresh gave permission for him to return to Eretz Yisrael, it's like he had new children, because this is a whole new set of children. It's an interesting idea that the children, we know ourselves, people that make Aliyah, it's very dangerous to go, and people who have a very a yearning to go to Eretz Yisrael, and they're not able to go until a little bit later after they get married. In the meantime, their children are already, you know, in the upper grades of elementary school. It's a very difficult, we hear all these stories from our own family members and from other people. It's a very difficult transition for children to make between different cultures, going from an American culture to an Israeli culture, and many people, they don't do it because they're afraid. And if they do try, many times they see it doesn't work, they go back. And sometimes children, you know, they get very confused. So it's very interesting. Here you have this idea, mamish, with regard to Zerubbabel. different sets of children. Normally, a person has children, it's not one list of children. No, we break up his children into all different. We have Pasuk Chav tells us about these children as if. Go back to look at Pasuk Yutes. Uvnei Pidah Yizrubavel. Veshimi Uben Zrubavel. Excuse me. Who is Zrubavel? He has a Meshulam, the Hananya, Ushloim Yisachoysam. Three children. Those are his children. And now we have now new children. V'chashuva, v'oyel, v'rechya, v'chasida, yushav, chesed, chomesh. Five? But you just told me the previous pasuk before he had three other children. So five plus three is eight. Where do you get this five and not eight? They're different types of children. Because they grew up in different parts of the world under a different set of circumstances. And ad kdei kach, we break them up entirely. It's a very powerful, seems like a very innocent little thing. But it's a very powerful thing the pasuk is mentioning here. Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Okay, now that's what did the Rashi say? So that's what Rashi says, that don't confuse, that's besides Shulamis, she was a sister, she's not part of the five. The reason why Rashi seems to be doing that is because the word Chamesh, okay, I'm not really sure why, okay, but let's leave it with that. Okay, Chasu Chamesh, those are five children. And I'm not mistaken, I saw in other Mepharshim that Chamesh can be the name of a person. Chamesh, that would mean they had six children. We tie Shavu Chamesh to be a grand total of five, and that four Zostel, that Yushav and Chesed are one. It's one person. But who says Chamesh is a number? Maybe Chamesh is a name. It's the name of a child. If Chamesh is the name of a child, then Yushav and Chesed can be two separate children. And that will increase the number of children by two. So it won't be eight, it'll be a grand total of 10 children. Okay, now we go to Pasuk Chaf Aleph and Rashi. We did the Pasuk Chaf, let's go to Pasuk Chaf Beis. Uvnei Shemaya. So now we go look on the chart, you see that we have Hananya, a long list of descendants going down many generations. On the very, very bottom of the page, she's Shechaniah. And Shechaniah, bring all the way up on top with an arrow to the left, Shemaiah. And then we have the listing of Shemaiah's children. So Rashi Pasuk Chabay says, Uvnei Shemaiah Chatush, and Yigal, Ubariach, V'Nara, V'Shavet, Shisha, six. Now if you count the children, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, there are only five children. How then can the pasuk include there are six children? Ein Melech, hey, Rashi is the obvious kasha. What in the world is going on here? By the pasuk include there are six children. We can only five children. The Yesh Boi Tam, the reason the commercial cost of Lamata, Bimish Moros Haladim, Lei Dusan Bnei Yedusan Gidayo Vitzarei Vishai V'Chasham Adaseu Tshisha V'Enu Kimhei, and we have the same thing. This is Rashi just saying there's a reason for it, and he has a precedent Lamata on Perik Chof Hei. We're going to have the same problem later on in Perik Chof Hei. We're going to have a list of names, and the pasuk is going to tell us a number, and the number is greater than the sum. What's the answer? The answer is that the mother was pregnant. There are different answers. Oh, so that's another answer. That's one answer. There are many answers. You look in the Mepharshim. One answer is, just like I told you, Chomesh may be a name, Shisha may be a name. That's in the Hanani. Another answer is that the child was not yet born at this moment in time. When Ezra compiled Sefer Divrei Hayamim, the mother was pregnant. So he wrote down, there will be a sixth son, but I don't yet know its name, and therefore I can't write its name. That's what? It might be a daughter. We list women. There are. I mean, we list Shlomis. We list Tamar. We list.
No, because he said it's
going to
be a sixth.
Okay, all right, a sixth child. There's going to be a sixth child, not necessarily. Or maybe they knew. Maybe they had techniques. We think we know everything. We think they were so much more advanced. There are indications in time of Chazal. They knew if a child will be a boy or a girl. They had indications. Maybe even better indications than we have today. Also, very interesting is they didn't name babies when they were still pregnant. That's also something that you learn according to this approach. I mean, we don't really know. When does it come from this idea that you first give the name to a baby when the baby is born? After the baby is when the baby is born, so by bris, there's so much Jewish, Avram Avinu, Hashem changes name, Avram, Avraham. And when do we give the name when the baby is born? Why do you have to give the name when the baby is born? If you know you're having a child, why can you call the name of the baby that when it's already a fetus? So, and you'll tell me because you don't know if it's a boy or a girl. So you can give a name. There are many names which are neutral. There are many names that have in Tanakh. There are names that are used for boys and girls. In fact, there's a Medrash which counts all the places where we have a name that can be used for a boy and a girl. So the answer is, you see, at least according to this approach, that this is only one approach, that the mother was pregnant and they didn't name it yet. You do see here, according to this approach, such a source in Tanakh that you don't give a name to a person before the person is born. We take it for granted because that's the way we grow up, so used to this. But why? Why is that so? Is it a pasuk? Is there really a reason why you can't give a name to a child before by the goyim? You know, by the goyim who don't have any religious, they already name the baby when they're pregnant. I mean, I don't know. I can't.
Was Shimshon named before he was born?
I don't remember. No, was he? I don't know if he was named in the Haftarah. I don't think he was named. Does it say that he was named? She told him. I don't think so. I think she told him to be a Nozer Mibeten. When he was born, then they first gave him a name. Okay, but it's definitely something very clear. There's six, we're not giving a name, he's not yet born, and if he's not yet born, then it's not appropriate that the person should have a name. Okay, that's another answer given that was from a different mother. We knew who the name was. The person had a name. He was an adult. However, Ezra did not want to give him a name because Ezra's only listing people that were significant, accomplished things that were important for the history of Klal Yisrael, for the honor of David. This person was semi-important. He was important enough that he can be listed, that he exists, but he was not important enough that his name should be mentioned. And also, it's a part of that what contributed to the fact that we didn't list him is because he had a different mother. The other four or five people had one mother, and this number six had a different mother. And therefore, we say in grand total he had six sons, five from one mother, who were going to list by name, and one from a different mother, they were not going to list by name. Okay, Pasik, that concludes all of the Rashis of Perek Gimel. Now, there are just some short Midrashim which I want to mention to you. I cannot told you all the Midrashim. Just one Midrash going back to Egla. Egla was Michal Bas Shaul. Okay, so she was Michal Bas Shaul, so we learned in Rashi 2 Perushim why she was called Egla. Number one, that she cried when she died. And Egel makes loud noises when it's in pain. And when Michal Bas Shaul gave birth to her son, that's mentioned here, Yisra'am, she died in childbirth, a fulfillment of the curse of David. Not the curse of David, it was a punishment for criticizing David for dancing before the Aron. The Pasuk said that she did not have a child ad Yom Mosa, and according to this interpretation, it means she would have a son, but the son would be born to her on the day that she died. In other words, she died during childbirth, and to indicate that she died during childbirth, her name was Egla. An Egel cries in a unique way. There's a lot of sound, and it's very painful to watch an eagle cry. So it's coming to allude that Michal, she died a very difficult death at the time that she gave birth to her child. That's the one shot. The second shot was she was chaviv. An eagle, I told you, I don't know what this means. Either eagle is very cute. Either it's very cute for us in a petting zoo, or it's very cute to its mother. It's chaviv. And it is a term that is used in Chazal to describe a wife that a husband finds favor in. What? A term of endearment. So this was David's choice wife. This was David's favorite wife. She was chaviv, like an egel, and that's why she's called Egla. There's another interpretation in the Medrash, and an egel is a rebellious type of creature. It's not mekabel a yoke. An egel, it's hard. It refuses to work to subjugate itself before a master until it gets older. I guess that ties well into the chet ha'egel. They threw gold into the fire. What came out? The egel. What is the significance? Just like the nature of a calf. I'm not familiar with animals, but so it says in Chazal, the nature of a calf, it refuses to accept authority. a baby parah, a baby ox refuses authority, so to Klal Yisrael, so to speak, when they worship the eagle, they were rejecting the authority of Hashem and the authority of Moshe. Yeah?
Remember the Medrash where the calf doesn't want to go to the slaughter and the mother has to...
Push it on, encourage it. Yeah, Hanami, right, very good. So let me read you the words. Let me read you the words of this Medrash. Why is it called Dover Acher? Why is it called in English? Ne'emar v'ashishi yisram le'egla ish David. Zo michal ela mo ho'egla hazos eina mikabeles oil al tzavara. Does not accept authority. Kach Michal, David's wife. Who is Michal? The daughter of Shaul. Shaul wanted to kill David. Shaul thought that David was a Moir b'Malchus. David was paranoid. David was he realized that the Malchus was slipping from him and being given to David. So David tried very hard to kill David many, many times. And he even used his own daughter. Shaul originally gave his daughter, he gave two daughters. He gave Merav, the older daughter. Merav died. And then he gave Michal. And David wanted to use his daughter as a way of getting to David to kill David. So his own daughter rebelled against her father. The daughter took sides many times, the conflict. Who will the daughter follow? Her father or her husband? So Michal followed her husband. She rebelled against her father, and that's why she's called an Egel. She accepted to accept the authority of her father. Kach Michal lo kiblo ol me'avio. She did not accept the authority from her father. Ella kintura oso. She angered him. She angered him by not assisting her father in capturing David. Okay, that is one medrash. Now, there's what? That is medrash Tehillim. Nuntes. In Tehillim Nuntes Dalit, okay, that's not what Rashi. Rashi gave another two perushim, chibo, endearment, and she died. Now there's another medrash. I don't have it over here, but it says here a unique word, egla ishtoi. Notice that when it comes to all the wives of David, beginning a paragimel, it says the following wives David had in Chayim. He had six wives. We discussed yesterday, 6 times 3, 18. That Chayim of Chayina. But notice it says the first was the Bechor was Amnon la Achinoyam haYisraelis. Sheni dil la Avigail. Shlishi ben Macha. And her vi Chagis. 5 was la Avital. Hashishi Yisram le Eglo Ishtoi. Very interesting. The only one that's called David's wife is Egla. The other 5 are not called wives. They're just called by their name. Chagis, Avital, Macha, Avigail, Achinoam. Why? Why is it that only Egla, Michal, is the only one that's called a wife? Now we know for a fact that these were wives. These were not Pilakshim. Okay, you can't give that answer because we learned from the Gemara. The Gemara says that Nasnat Navi told him, we have a Milvad besides all of the Pilakshim of David. So it's clear as day from the Pesukim that these are real wives. Yet we're only calling Egla, number 6, a wife. So why is that so? So similarly, you would say because that he was his primary wife. Like you have a Yaakov and Leah, Shuli Keres Sabayis. Okay, that you can say on a very simple level, that was his favorite wife, that's why she's called Egla, she was Chavav to David, endearment. Okay, that's one, I think, one very similar approach, but there's a Medrash.
Rashi says that.
Rashi, what does Rashi say? Rashi focuses, on the word Egla. No, Rashi Hashishi Yisrael Legla Yishtoi Midrash V'chi Bilvad Yishtoi Ela Shepas is the only one. But Rashi really is focusing on the word Egla. Rashi's primary focus is on the word Yishtoi. His focus is on Legla. This is the only one. V'shoy Chaviva Love Ke Egla. Shoot that Lule. Right, that's in the Chavivas. Oh, I was saying Elu Shalom Legla Chavivas Shalom Michal Kara Oisa Ish. Okay. You're right. Sorry, it's Rashi. So Rashi says the Farish is called Isha. That's one shot. Besides the fact Egla also has a connotation of endearment, it's also this is his primary wife. But there's another Medrash that tells we have to know the story of Palti ben Yefes, if I'm not mistaken, that was his name. That we know that when David was running away from Shaul, Shaul was infuriated by David. Shaul was paranoid. And what did Shaul do? He took away David's wife, and Shaul said that they were never really married. Shaul said that David, but by Melayish, Palti ben Laish. Shaul claimed that I gave, first of all, Shaul first married off Merav to David. That he was married to Merav. First of all, how was David allowed to marry? There were two daughters. Shaul had two daughters, right? Shaul had two daughters. One daughter didn't have any children, it appears. That's why they're not listed. Shaul had two daughters, Merav and Michal. So he lists the obvious question, how is a man allowed to marry two sisters? And that is categorically forbidden. So the answer is only... Exactly. So the answer is Merav died. After Merav died, then David married Michal. Okay, that's the answer. So that's why, and when we are here, whatever, we do not list Merav, simply because Merav died without children, so there were no children, therefore it's not considered to be David's wife at the time. Then, the son of Yim is only the other way around, only when the husband dies. Now he married Michal. Now, we have to study Sefer Shmuel, but part of the story is, when David was running away from Shaul, at one point in time they were separated because he was on the run, and Shaul took his daughter, Michal, and said, "You were never married to David. You were never really married to David. It was only Altanai. He had some cheshbon. I only gave it to you on a condition that David would be loyal to me," whatever the story was. I don't remember the details. We'll come to it later on, and we'll go through the Sefer. And Shaul took away his daughter and gave her in marriage to Palti ben Laish. Now, Palti ben Laish was a tzaddik, and he knew that really Michal was, he knew at Alpi Halacha, Michal was married, he was an Eishes Ish, and Shaul is losing it. Okay, Shaul was paranoid beyond belief, because of what we can't judge Shaul as a tzaddik. He said, "Oh, we shouldn't say anything about Shaul. There's no one that comes to Shaul. He's Ein Adam Yerid L'Sev Daita Shal Shaul." But Shaul was mistaken in this matter. So Palti ben Laish, he took a sword and he thrust the sword between him and Michal. As a reminder that if he goes near Michal, even though Shaul forced them to live together, Shaul, to show that David is not married to Michal, he took Michal and gave in marriage to Palti ben Laish. And when the king tells you to do something, you listen, because if you don't listen, you're finished. And they were living together in the same home, and Palti ben Laish took a sword and he put it between his bed and her bed to remind him that if he goes near Michal, he is chayiv misa, because she really is an eishes ish. And he has no choice to be miyachay with her, because Shaul forced this upon him. And this went on for many, many years. And ultimately, later on, now what is the halacha? This last six parasha, sota. If a man is married to a woman, and the woman has relations with another man, she becomes forbidden to her husband. She's not allowed. After everything settled down, David went to retrieve his wife, Michal. And the pasuk, but there was suspicion, there was a question, maybe she was mizaneh with Palti ben Laish. Maybe there was an act that was not proper, which would have made Michal forbidden to David. So there was an understanding that nothing happened. They both admitted. Michal, there was no halachic warning. A man has to warn his wife. You don't have all the details, and they both were clear that there was never anything inappropriate between Michal and Palti ben Laish, and that's why David was allowed to take back Michal as a wife. The pasuk here is saying testimony that it's his wife by right. This Michal eglo ishtoi. This is David's wife. This is not the wife of Palti ben Laish. The pasuk here, and nothing inappropriate happened between Palti ben Laish and Michal, and therefore David was within full rights to take back Michal as a full-fledged wife with no issue whatsoever. So the pasuk here is giving testimony, so to speak. This is Sifrei Holy Sfarim. Ksuvim is written with Ruach HaKodesh. HaKodesh Baruch Hu is basically giving, saying testimony that this indeed is David's wife. He is entitled to marry her, and nothing inappropriate happened with Palti ben Laish that should be a problem for David taking back his wife. That is another very important medrash of why he calls only her from the six wives his ishtoi. Okay, now we come to some very important midrashim which Rashi seemingly did not mention. If you look on the chart, go down to where Yechoniah Asir Shiltiu You go down before my handwriting. Before my handwriting, you have Zerubbabel. Go up to Pedaya. Go up to Shealtiel, Asir, and Yechonia. We know that Yoshio, we discussed this yesterday, Yoshio was really, he was the 17th in the line from David. And we learned yesterday, really the Beis Hamikdash was meant to be destroyed in the lifetime of Yoshio because that was 22 years, but that was the time of the Chorban. In reward for properly eulogizing Yoshio, they were given a 22-year extension to the Beis HaMikdash. And during that period of time, Yoshio had three sons, Yochanan, Yoyakim, and Tzidkiyahu. First, Yochanan ruled. Yochanan was not the oldest. Yochanan was the second oldest. Yoyakim is the oldest. But Yochanan was the first to be Melech. He had another name, Yehoyachas. After he died, then Yehoyakim became Melech. After Yehoyakim was taken to Galus, Yechonia became Melech. And after his son, and then the Malchus went back to his uncle, Tzidkiyahu, also known as Shalom. So we learned the Rashi that Tzidkiyahu was really the third son of Yoshiyahu, but he's called the fourth because he was the fourth one to rule, to serve as Melech after the death of Yoshiyahu. Now, let's go back to Yehoyakim. Yehoyakim had a son, Yechonia. Yehoyanya had a son, Asir and Shealtiel. Now, in this chart, you'll notice that now Tzidkiyah on the right side is not Tzidkiyah. That's a different person. We learned the Psukim. But Yehoyanya had two sons. We have over here now two sons. He had a son and a grandson. Okay, this is how most Mepharshim learn that Asir is a son of Yechonia, and Shealtiel is a grandson of Yechonia, and Shealtiel gave birth to Pedaya. And that's really what's mashma in the Pasuk. If you go to Pasuk Yud, you go to Pasuk Yud Zayin, Uvnei Yechonia, Asir, and then it says Shealtiel Beno. So it's a poetic way of writing a pasuk. We put the word, there's some symmetry between the word Beno. Beno first, the son of Yechonia was Asir, and Asir had a son, his name was Shealtiel, was Beno, the son of Asir. However, there are many Mepharshim that disagree and learn that both Asir and Shealtiel were sons of Yechonia. Okay, so they were the same, and that would mean that there's one less generation. That they were two different sons. He had a son called Asir, a son called Shealtiel, or they were the same person. Now, what's the significance of them being the same person? So we have a Medrash, and the Medrash attributes the word Asir and Shealtiel to Yechonia himself, meaning that Yechonia was captured, was taken prisoner by Nebuchadnezzar. And Nebuchadnezzar threw Yechonia into a dungeon. Okay, during the tail end of the Bayis Rishon, Yechonia was taken as a prisoner by Nebuchadnezzar to Babel. And at that point in time, Nebuchadnezzar appointed Yechonia's uncle, Tzidkiyahu, as the Melech in Yerushalayim. Now Yechonia, when he was taken to Babel, he was really going to be the last line of Malchus David. Because shortly thereafter, Tzidkiyahu was killed. He was killed. And the only remnant of the Malchus of David was Yechonia. And there was a very great danger that Yechonia would die in jail, in the prison, the dungeon, and there would be no one left to continue the seed of David. So there are different midrashim, and first of all, we have to know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'll read you the midrash in a moment if I have it over here. Hashem made a neder. I think it's the pasuk in Yirmiyah. He made a shavua. I am so angry at the Jewish people for what they have done, all of their sins, that the Malchus, the seed of David, will come to an end. And indeed it will perish. HaKadosh Baruch Hu later had charata on his oath because they did tshuva. Yechonia did tshuva in the dungeon. So this is like a bizarre medrash as it gets. HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself went to the Bezdin Shalmaila, and Hashem sat down, like, you know, the Hataras Nedarim, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu sat down before the Bezdin Shalmata and Shalmaila and said, I want to be Mata Neder. I made a Neder that I'm going to put an end to the seed of David. And the Beis Din Shalmala was matir the neder of Hashem. And that's what it means, Shaltiel Shoal. Shoal Kel comes from the word, I'll read you the Medrash in a moment, they were Shoel. Shoel means to remove the oath of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem went to be Shoel on its vow. This Medrash, it's in Vayikra Rabba, Parsha Yud. It's also Gemara in Sanhedrin, Gemara. Sanhedrin Lamed Chas. I'm going to read you all the Medrash very quickly soon. That's one thing. Asir means he was another Medrash. Let me just tell you the Medrash as I'm going to read inside. Asir means that Yechonia was imprisoned. He was a prisoner. Now, how did he have a child? So the Medrash says that the Rabbanon, the Talmidei Chachamim, they bribed the wife, okay, it's bizarre as it gets, of Nebuchadnezzar. They told Nebuchadnezzar's wife, when you are intimate with Nebuchadnezzar, tell him that it's not fair. Look, you have a right to be with your wife, and here you have a prisoner in the dungeon that's suffering. He also has needs. He also has rights. So, and she said this to him when they were together. So Nebuchadnezzar said, you're right, it's not fair. After all, he's also a person. So what do? They got a hold of Yechonia's wife. They retrieved her from Eretz Yisrael. And they lowered her into the dungeon. That's what it says. And it was in the dungeon, they were standing. There was no room. And they had relations, and she got pregnant. And Chazal tell us, the fact that she was able to become pregnant from such a maisa is l'malam miderech hateva, because we have a tradition that a woman does not become pregnant in being in such a position. A time Chazal, I don't know what doctors will say today, but a time Chazal, it was unheard of, it was impossible. And this, that she was able to become pregnant, was a nes, and that's how Asir, Yechonia's children, continued. And that's, I guess, why they were named by these names. The reason why Yechonia named his children, his child, Asir, was because he was a prisoner. And Shaltil also means to plant. Shin Aleph Lamed Tov comes from the root of planting, a seed. Zera, they was planted. HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought about that he was seated in Eretz. So that's why one of the names was called Zerubbabel. Also, one of the grandchildren was called Zerubbabel. Zora, he was seated. The seed came in Babel. Okay, these are the basic ideas. So remember, this is very important when it comes to the day. We have a lot of this in the next parak. We have a lot of this. We have to learn the psukim on a level of pshat. On the level of pshat, we have a Yechonia, a person. His name was Yechonia. And Yechonia had a son. His name was Asir. Asir had a son. His name was Shaltiel, which means Shaltiel was the grandson of Yechonia. And then Shaltiel had five sons. He had six sons. And then Pedaya had a son, Zerubbabel. Okay, that is Derech Pshat. But Loinitin Divrei Hayanim Ela Lidarish. We also take the names, and we ascribe those names to people that are in the vicinity. Not necessarily that exact person or that person's father, but somewhere in that vicinity of the family, on this chart, there's a person that went through a life-changing experience, a life-altering experience, and the names of the people that I mentioned in this area reflect what happened at that point in time. So let me read you the words. Okay, Vuvnei, this comes from a Gemara. I'm telling you basic stuff. A Gemara in Masechta Sanhedrin on Daf Lamed Zayin, going into Daf Lamed Ches. The Gemara says, Vuvnei Yechonia Asir Shealtiel. Bino, V'lom Nikra Asir. Why is Yechonia's son called Asir? Bibnei, she bartu imo bebeis ho asu. Because the mother got pregnant with this person, Asir, from the Yechonia, in the dungeon. V'lama nikra Shaltiel. Why is the grandson called Shaltiel? Bibnei sheshelosokel. That means impregnated. HaKadosh Baruch Hu caused the wife of Nechonia to become pregnant. Sheloi kederech hanishtolin. Not the way people normally become pregnant. And that's why it's Kel. Kel means it was an act of God. HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought about that this woman would become pregnant through a man, not Hashem to think through a man, through her husband Yechonya. But the fact that she was able to become pregnant was like a pel, was a wonder. Because al derech hateva, like today, Baruch Hashem, this technology, we all know, this incredible technology that people have a hard time having children, the things that they can do today, it's mamish mavir al haraya. Nisim and Niflos. So it doesn't necessarily mean it was a miracle, it was that the HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought about special circumstances where this child came into the world, even though it was very unusual. This is what it says in the Gemara Masechta Sanhedrin, next Drasha, Dovracha, another interpretation. Why is the name called Shaltiel? Shenishal al Oloso. The word Shin Lamitov somehow relates to the world being Shoyel, going to a Bezdin and telling them, I have a request, I want you to annul my oath. So and El doesn't only mean Hashem, but it means also Allah, an oath. El comes from the word Allah. Allah means an oath. Hashem went to the Bezdin Shalmala and made a request that they release him from this oath. What's the oath? The oath is that the seed of David would perish. Shekadosh Baruch Hu who nishbat she'aviv Yechonya yomus b'loy banim. The kaidem shenoylad, before he was born, the child was born, she'altiel keviyachol nishal Hashem al shivuaso. Hashem was shoyel on his shvu in the Bezdin Shalmala. So you learn Masechta Nedarim, or you learn Masechta Shavuos, you have some very powerful drush. Even by Kadosh Baruch Hu, there's such a concept of being shoyl on a neder. Nusach Acher, another interpretation. Amar Tanchum, here we're going into the same idea.
It's a little confusing. Right?
What?
I mean, Hashem then would have to be Mati Neder on all the Dover that Zerah and David will never. Will never disappear.
Where did Hashem make a neder? Will never perish.
I don't
know if it's a neder. It's a bracha. It has to be studied in more depth. It has to be studied in more depth. What does it mean?
We came across a medrash that says that Hashem never reneges on a promise. Of
a good promise.
But can renege on a promise of
evil. Okay, so maybe that's all what it means. You have to take that and match it up against this to maybe put the two together, what it means. But Hashem had a shvu, and Hashem reneged on a shvu by going to the Bezdin Shalmala. That's why it's called Shaltiel. And basically it says the same thing I just read from the Gemara, but it says the exact thing in the Medrash. Nusach Acher, Amar Tanchum, Rabbi Yirmiya, Asir Zeh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, She'osar Es Atzma B'Shvua. It's a little bit different. We take the two words together. Asir means Hashem imprisoned himself. Hashem took an oath. When you take an oath, you're nothing you can do. You're locked up. You're forced to fulfill your oath. That's why the son is called Asir, to reflect that Hashem originally made a shvuah that there would not be a child. But then she'altiel she'shohal kel lebeistina shalmala. Spooky stuff. Hashem went to the Bezdin Shalmala. One of the Bezdin Shalmata. Why couldn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu go to the Bezdin Shalmala? Right? Why do you have to go to the Bezdin Shalmala? You can... The Bezdin Shaldina Shalmala Al-Nidra. Why? Adrav, the Bezdin Shalmala has even more power than the Bezdin Shalmala. Torlav HaShemayim. Torlav HaShemayim. I was once, years ago, there was a person that was not well. And it was amazing what I heard. I mean, you can't, I don't know how you can do this. There was a person that was not well. A very young person that was not well. And it was saying Tehillim. And part of the saying Tehillim, there was a Talmud Chacham that got up, a very big Talmud Chacham got up to speak. And he said, I want to speak to the Bezdin Shalmala. Can you imagine someone getting up over here? And I said, Ribbono Shel Olam, we're standing here in this location. And there's a very big tzara. This person is very sick. We want to let it known. We want to make it known that the Bezdin Shalmata is not maskim to the psak of the Bezdin Shalmala. That's what he said. I'm not making this up. That in the Bezdin Shalmala, it's obvious they have decided that this person has serious problem. We want to let it be known that the Bezdin Shalmata here, this mokim, we're not maskim. We're not maskim to the decision of the Bezdin Shalmala, and the Bezdin Shalmata has to prevail. has to prevail over the Bez and Shalmat, Shalmaila. Now, it takes a lot of guts to talk like that.
He's semi-recovered.
He did semi-recovered. I don't know. I have not followed him to I told this to someone. I remember telling him, I said, you got to do this. You got to talk like this. So he says there are some people that talk. You can say whatever you want, but it's a certain
dramatic effect.
It does. It definitely has a dramatic effect. But it struck me when I read this medrash. She'altiel she'shohal kel lebeis dino shel maila, not lebezin shel mata. There's a famous Gemara Masechet Brachos where one of the Tanaim was going into a churva, and he heard the baskel come out, and Hashem said, "Woe to me that I have exiled my children." And I made a shavua that I would bring galus. And this Talmud Chacham, this Tanu and Amori came back and he told what happened. He heard this bas kol in the churva, in this ruin. And this is what he heard. So they said to him, "You fool, you should have been Mati Hashem's neder. If you heard the bas kol, that means HaKadosh Baruch Hu was giving you authority to be Matir, the neder of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You should have said to Hashem, Mochuloch. A dayan mumche can be matir and neder. If you don't have dayan and mumche, only ordinary people, then you have to have at least three dayanim. But a dayan mumche, an expert, has the power to be matir and neder levad, alone, as a yochid. So this Tana obviously had the status of a dayan of a mumche. So they said to him, if you heard the baskol, you, the Bez Shalmata, you have the power to be Matir Hashem's Neder. Hashem now can bring the Geula. You lost out on an incredible opportunity. It's a Gemara. This is not some esoteric Medrash. So what do you see from that Gemara? The Bez Shalmata is being Matir, the Neder of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a Gemara in Brachas. You've heard the Gemara, right? You heard the Gemara. See, I'm not making it up. He agrees that he heard this Gemara. So you see, there's a concept of the Bezer Shel Mata. Here we are dealing with the concept of the Bezer Shel Maila. Okay? Asir and She'altil. Okay, that's the last medrash here. And then Anani. This again, Anani, one, just to conclude that we did already with this Targum. This is the Targum. We mentioned yesterday, we have to discuss the Targum in much more detail. On your prints, I think most of your editions, you have there, it's called Targum Yosef. What do you have in the blue? The blue you have. What do you have in the blue? What do you call Targum Yosef on the side?
No, nothing.
And in the red you have Targum. What do you like better, the blue or the red or the blue? You like the blue, I see. You take the blue. Yeah, you like the blue. You like the only Rashi and the Mitzvot. Okay. The Targum. Now there is no Targum. The tradition is there is no Targum on Kisuvim. Right? We have Targum Yonasan ben Uziel on Nevi'im. In Chumash we have Targum Unkelus, Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, and Targum Yerushalmi. There are three major Targumim on Chumash. Unkelus. So Yonasan ben Uziel is more mystical. He brings down every here and there some midrashim, and Targum Yerushalmi is like in the middle somewhere. It's not as elaborate as Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, but it's not as simple as Targum of Unkelus. You should know that Targum Yerushalmi until recent times, until about I think 50 years ago, we didn't have. In the Mikros Gedolos, we only had snippets. The Vatican had a copy of the original Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, and it was released, I think, accidentally. There was a scholar, Christian scholar, who was doing research, and he had access to their private library, and he did work. I'm not sure if it was an accident, it was on purpose, and it was released, and Rav Kasher, the one who wrote Torah Shlema, he picked up on this, and he actually, now it's printed. For some reason, the Mikros Gedolos, at least even the popular editions, they have refused, I don't know why, to restore the Targum, the full Targum Yerushalmi. I don't know why. And in Rav Kasher, he has the whole, they only still have, look at the Mikros Gedolos, the classic editions of the Mikros Gedolos, even the ones been reprinted, the Ma'ar, they just have the Targum Yerushalmi, the snippets. Just little pieces here and there which have been preserved, but there's a whole, every single pasuk has a complete Targum. Now, on Navi, there is no Targum Unkelus. And there is no Targum Yerushalmi that I know of. But what is the Targum when they say, look in the Targum on Navi? That's Targum Yoinasan ben Uziel. And it's fascinating. And in fact, in recent years, there's a lot of people have been putting out Sfarim that have elaborated. They've wrote in commentaries. There's some really good stuff today coming out on Targum Yoinasan ben Uziel. Now, what about Kisuvim? So the truth is that Targum Yoinasan ben Uziel did, I think we learned he really did have a commentary. He wanted to write a commentary, and in heaven they told him, no, don't you dare. You may not translate Ksuvim into Targum, because in Sefer Daniel it is revealed the Kates of Moshiach, and it's not for the Hamoinam, for the population, for the common man to know when Moshiach will come. And if you will translate into, it's all Piruach HaKodesh, the Pasuk into the Targum, it will uncover. I don't think it means it'll be literal, you'll be able to just read the year when Mashiach is coming, but people will have an easier time in discovering the Zman of Mashiach. Now, there was a ban. Now the question is, what does that mean? All of Ksuvim may not have Targum? Or does that mean only Daniel, Ezra, Nehemiah? What about Divrei Hayamim? So it's not really clear. There are different. I don't have all the details. There's a very good appendix in the back of the Divrei Hayamim art scroll that discusses the Targum. I have to read it carefully and tell you what it says there. You can read it yourself. But there is a very big debate exactly who wrote this Targum that we have on Divrei Hayamim. It reads very much like a Targum Yoinasan ben Uziel. It has that same style, very similar in style. Why is it called Targum? Who is this Rabbi Yosef? So we don't even know who he is. Someone has said, because the Gemara says, the Gemara very often, when the Gemara quotes Pesukim, it makes Josh, Kedimitargim Rabbi Yosef. Kedimitargim Rabbi Yosef. And that's why it got quoted. But I think many, many opinions, commentators say there's no such Rabbi Yosef. And who it is, it's not clear. Maybe it's a. Okay, it's not clear who it is. But he does quote very fascinating midrashim. This things that we not necessarily have. I mean, we don't have every midrash. A lot of midrashim have been lost from us. But some we do, some we don't. And even when he does quote a midrash, it's very interesting how he quotes the midrash with his, you know, with a certain parish. And he quotes this, one of the things that he quotes here, and is something which is really fascinating. We mentioned it in passing, is it all comes from the midrash. I'm not even sure. No, this is the Medrash Tanchuma, that the last one, Va'anani, is Shiva. Anani is Melech HaMashiach. We've gone through the entire chart, down to David, all the way down to all of Zerubbabel, and we come to this person called Anani. Who is Anani? Anani is Melech HaMashiach. Why? Based on the pasuk in Daniel, where Melech HaMashiach will come flying on a cloud. And Anani, and that is. What it says in Targum, Anani, and that's something to keep to take note of, and also to attribute it to this Targum, what we call Targum Yosef. That's why in the blue they don't want to call Targum Yosef; they refuse because of the controversy. Who is Rabbi Yosef? Who is he? Is he a modern day commentator? Is he from time of the Gemara? Can the Targum be Rabbi Yosef? We don't know. It's a big mystery who wrote the Targum, and many Rishonim did not have access to this. They don't make any mention of it. But here, this one of the popular midrashim of Mashiach Mashiach. Okay, so this concludes Perek Gimel. Next time, we're going to begin Perek Dalet.